Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Future is Bilingual podcast. My name is Heather. Thank you for joining me here today. I wanted to take a second to make a quick note before I get into my talk with Christina, who is my friend and colleague from Freestyle Languages, because we do mention Arabic and Hebrew and Palestine and Israel, just as places we've both been and languages we've both studied. We're very mindful to keep it to a discussion about languages and not about politics or the ongoing conflict. And I just wanted to say that our hearts go out to everyone on both sides who has been suffering and who continues to suffer. And our talk is going to pertain just to the languages. But while I'm here, let me tell you a little bit about what Christina is going to talk to us about. So she's a fellow polyglot and a fellow language teacher. And we discuss things such as, do our personalities change depending on the languages we speak? How do we solve this common polyglot problem of balancing and maintaining our different languages? We have also both learned a language for a personal relationship. So we discuss that and what are the advantages there. And we both have extensive experience teaching different levels. So that comes into the conversation. And finally, she gives us a bunch of great resources for a bunch of different languages, and I'm sure similar resources exist. If it's a language that you are learning, there is quite possibly a similar resource out there. So we encourage you to search and find a lot of great things. But without further ado, I'm going to get into my discussion with Christina. Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Future is Bilingual podcast. This is the first episode of the fall, and I'm so excited to be sitting with my good friend and colleague, Christina. So, Christina, tell us all about yourself.
So, my name is Christina Salhi, and I'm a language teacher. I'm a lecturer of Spanish at Georgia Southern University in South Georgia. And I also teach English and Spanish for Freestyle Languages online. I've been a teacher for more than 20 years now. I've also taught Hebrew. I've taught English abroad. I've taught in the public schools, so I definitely have a lot of teaching background there.
Mm-hmm. How long have you been at university?
I think about 10 years now. If I remember correctly, I think I started at the university in 2014, if I'm not mistaken.
Oh, very nice. Mm-hmm. So Christina and I both work at Freestyle. That's how we met. And we have lots of little random points in common and things that we chat about. So we thought, perfect, let's record an episode and talk about our love of languages, which everyone at Freestyle, all of our, you know, teachers, interns, like all of us have this passion mm-hmm. for languages and for teaching specifically. But yeah, we'll get more into it. So tell us more. You mentioned a couple things like teaching abroad, going abroad. Like, how did you... Mm-hmm. And maybe which languages you speak, because I know you're a fellow polyglot who speaks lots. So which yes. ones and how and when did you acquire them?
So my mom's Italian. My first language was English, though, but I always loved Italian. And I kind of sought it out in our family. I was the one always asking my aunts, like, how do you say this? How do you say that? My aunt would bring me CDs and tapes, you know, a little throwback from Italy, from music, and even magazines, like teen magazines from Italy. And when I got to high school, Spanish was just the class I liked. I was pretty much just your average student, but Spanish was the class I excelled in. I enjoyed it. And Spanish and Italian, of course, are so similar. So when I went into college, I decided to major in Spanish, which is, you know, why I'm a Spanish teacher. But along the way, there are a lot of detours in life. I met an Israeli while I was working on my thesis project in Ecuador, and I moved to Israel with him and learned Hebrew. And yeah.
So wait, did you grow up in Georgia or are you just in Georgia now?
No, I my dad was in the Air Force, so we kind of grew up all over the place. But I went to high school and college in Louisville, Kentucky. So usually when people ask, I say that I'm from Kentucky.
Kentucky, but Georgia, to Ecuador to Israel.
To Israel, yeah, just bouncing all around. But I tell people I don't like to travel, but I love to live abroad.
Yeah.
So just a week for me, I guess, if I just want to see the country, but I really love that atmosphere of living abroad and acquiring the language that way.
Mm. I can't, when I think of people who do these crazy, like, four European countries in 8 days, I'm like, what are you doing? Like, that sounds exhausting. You're barely seeing anything. Like, you're hitting the hotspot. Like, here's us at the Tour Eiffel, and like here's us at mm-hmm. like Pisa, but like you're not
you don't have time to get good knowledge of like the people and the customs and the culture. And I mean, you get a glimpse, but it's almost like a quick drive-by, like, okay, we made it. Let's go to the next
And
stop.
it's sort of silly, but I like to pretend that I live there when I'm there. So I never stay in hotels. I always rent little apartments. And one of my favorite things is like going to the grocery store, preparing a meal, sitting on the balcony and eating it while I watch the city go by, just talking to the locals, like really having that experience, the kind of slow experience. I do get it, you know, if I wanted to see several countries where I didn't speak the language, I might do something like that. But I really like, you know, being there and getting a really like a true feel for the city
Yeah, I'm not critiquing it.
and
It just sounds
yeah.
exhausting.
It
And
sounds exhausting. It exhausts me.
it's
Yes,
not my
exactly.
style of, like it's not a bad thing. It's 100% better than staying home or never leaving the States or, like there's so many other options. Like, of course, it's a good thing to travel, but to me, that's not my ideal. Like, I would rather stay in one even city for the 2 weeks rather than try and
Go
like
everywhere. I
go everywhere,
completely
see everything.
agree.
Like, that's just that to each their own, right?
Yes, each their own. Yeah, but so definitely English, Spanish, and Hebrew are my, let's say, strongest languages when it comes to, you know, all four: reading, writing, speaking, and listening. But my Italian's good, my French is good. I speak Moroccan Arabic, which is Darija, you know, just mainly for daily tasks. But yeah, so
So
those are mine.
how did you learn Darija?
Morocco is one of the countries where I taught English. I lived there for 2 years,
Oh,
and yeah, it was funny because I went completely set on learning Darija. Like, I'm going to learn Arabic. I'm not French didn't really interest me at the time, but everyone speaks French to you when you're
right, you're
foreign
a
in
foreigner,
Morocco.
so they automatically default to French, yeah.
Yeah, it was they're a French colony, so I learned French, and of course French for me was much easier to acquire. You know, I can read it. There are a lot of cognates.
Being another
So
romance, you already speak Italian and Spanish, and Derija is, I mean, there's lots of as listeners may know, I was learning Derija for like the past year and a half, so I have some Arabic knowledge, but then trying to do a specific dialect, it's a whole different ball game because even Arabs don't understand Moroccans, and they speak
You're
really
right.
fast, like typical, like they cut a lot of vowels, so like it's just consonants, da, 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 da. And then there's lots of reels and memes because I follow all these accounts to learn about, like, yeah, you think you can speak Darija, but then you go there and it's like, it's like just how fast and how squished they speak. It's, yeah, Arabic, I mean, for an English speaker is one of the hardest languages already, and we're talking classic modern standard. So to have like the more slang, the more.
Yeah, the hardest part for me is it really is a dialect. It's not really a written language. So
Yeah.
there aren't really aren't there may be more now, but at the time the only textbook I could really get my hands on was the Peace Corps, Darija Morocco textbook.
Which
But yeah,
you
if
shared
you
with me.
take an Arabic, do you know that one?
Yeah, you shared it with me. Not
Oh, okay. Oh,
yeah.
did I? Oh, okay. Yeah, and that one I think is great, but again, you know, as far as if you take an Arabic class, you're either going to learn modern standard or classical. There really aren't a lot of classes, or there weren't at the time available for Darija, specifying Darija. So yeah,
Yeah,
but
lots of
yeah.
people are popping up on the social media accounts though, like, like a person's like, I'm going to teach Darija. So there are lots of little accounts now popping up, but when you were there, it probably wasn't as readily available. And I find it's
No, it was
the way
not.
people write it because depending on who you're talking to, they'll write it differently. Like you said, like it's they write it with the Latin letters with our, the same letters as English, but some people will put an A, some people will put an E, some people, like the there's not like these like set rules. Some people write the French, a CH for a sh, whereas other people write the SH for the sh.
Ah, that's a good point. I didn't really
Depending
notice that
on
until you said it
who you're
just now.
talking to, yeah, sometimes they'll write shukran with an SH and sometimes with a CHOU, like the French way of writing shukran. Because otherwise it'd be shu, it would be the other ouf from French.
Sure.
You need the OU.
That's right.
But
That's
yeah, there's
right.
just so much variation. Like there's just and it's like it's fine, like just everybody does their thing and you can write it with Arabic letters, but I find that most people type it just in
What
Latin letters.
exactly? Exactly. Yeah, and I've even seen where people use like the number
The
three for the
numbers.
ayin sound.
All
Yeah.
of the Arabic dialects do that though. Like they
Oh,
have
do
like
they?
yeah, so like the certain like the ha They'll do like a seven, and like the ein is the three. So that, yeah, the ch is like a five, I think. Yeah, that's kind of standardized, I think, amongst all the dialects if they type in Latin letters.
Okay, interesting.
Yeah,
I don't think I've texted much in Darija.
That's a whole experience.
Yeah. Well, you know, usually I would use it in the market and in social situations, but things like bank, doctor's office, pharmacy, I would always just go to French. But I did have a lot of the Moroccan English teachers I worked with. They were very helpful with teaching me Darija. And I even had an American friend who was a teacher there who was fluent in Darija. And she would give us, not on a very organized basis, but lessons. So I did, when I was there, I could handle myself in the street, taking the bus, taking taxis, buying things in the market. Yeah. But it's not Mumtaz.
It's amazing. Cool. Yeah, I know. It's really cool.
I have to say, when you speak a less known language, it really surprises people. I don't know if you've ever impressed a Moroccan that didn't know.
All the
time. It's like, wow, really? Like, and they usually have that moment of shock where they don't even respond. It's like, is this happening?
Yeah.
But
or
yeah.
They keep talking French. And I'm like, no, like, I want you to speak. I'll be like, Alesh, why are you not speaking in Darija with me?
Well, initially, one of the first things people taught me was say, Ana mashi Fransawiya. I'm not French, you know. But then they're like, well, what do I do?
Now what?
Now what? That's my Western language I'm gonna help you out with. But over time, I discovered that they thought they were trying to help, you know, they were helping me, you know, they figured she's a tourist. She's not from here. I'm going to help her with a language she might recognize.
Right.
And later on, it really did help me because of course I caught on to French much faster.
And
everything is written in French as well. They are hospitable.
But they're so hospitable in the sense that they change. They're very flexible with their language. Like, you need this, you know, Spanish, you need French, you need English. Like, they'll like, just change for you. They're like, it's fine. Yeah, whatever. You need class.
Yeah, linguistically, it's a very exciting place. I mean, most people speak 2-3 languages. You know, they might speak Berber with their grandma, Darija with their friends, French at school.
But then they learn English. They can do like a modern standard when they need to. If there's like an Egyptian who comes, they switch to that. Like they'll switch their Arabic to, so that like they accommodate. They're very accommodating. That's the word I meant to say. Whereas
I feel like it's the Netherlands of Africa. like they know that a lot of people don't speak Dutch, so they have to accommodate these other European languages that you know come through. So yeah, definitely, that's
a
funny.
Good analogy. I like that. But yeah, they're very accommodating, whereas I feel like other Arab countries are like, no, you should speak like us, you know, like they want you to accommodate to their dialect, like, oh well, we have the correct. And like Moroccans are like, yeah, nobody understands us, we'll accommodate to
they have to, and they have so much contact with Europe. I feel like, I mean, it's just right across, you know, Spain is 40 minutes away on the ferry, and Spanish people, French people come all the time vacationing. So I think they know they have to speak with them.
It's a livelihood.
The only two other Arabic speaking countries I've been to are Jordan and Egypt. And I didn't find that many people spoke English, nor did they want to. They were still very nice. The hospitality that, you know, the Arab world is famous for was there. But in Jordan, especially, the signs were even in Arabic. In Morocco, it's usually French or French and Arabic.
It's both, yeah.
Yeah, and in Jordan I thought, wow, I really need to work on my reading, or I'm never gonna find this hotel again.
Where am I
But yeah, and again, it just the other languages just weren't there, unless I was in like a very touristy place, like a hotel, or well, and I was in Amman, which at the time, especially back then, was not very touristy. So even then, even the people at the museums and stuff weren't super
and I think English. Even in the decades, you know, like we're not that old, but even if we're talking like a decade ago or 2 decades ago, like things have changed insanely just with the amount of English that people are learning. So, you know, maybe 10 years ago, it was hard to find an English speaker, but I bet, you know, if you went now, things could be vastly different because the younger generation, I'm not talking older, talking like find people in their 20s, like they probably did learn English in school. So I think just English being this lingua franca, you know, since the 90s with the internet and all that, like I think things have changed drastically, even though of course Arabic is going to be the main language when you go to these countries, but I think maybe I'm wrong, people can
talk. I agree. I think social media plays a big part. Now they can have friends in other countries, and even if the friend isn't a native English speaker, if they don't speak Arabic, they usually do switch to to English. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Especially in a country like Jordan, English would probably be the default that they would speak with.
And even with
somebody else,
Morocco, it's like French is the first, you know, foreign language, but a lot of them are now learning English. So like, you know, they're adding on, they're like, well, we have French, let's do English. All over the world, you know, English is this huge lingua franca, just the language everybody wants to communicate in or using for communication, even if it's at a simple level, right? Like everybody has this basic, which is good and bad, I guess. It's a whole topic we could have a discussion on. But okay, so we got a little lost. We got English, Spanish, Hebrew. You said those are like your top, you can like read, write, you can do all the stuff. And then Italian, it's pretty good. French, Deja. So not modern standard, just that specific dialect. You haven't studied classical?
Not modern standard. I could probably, because I lived in Israel, when I would go to, you know, Arab areas of Jerusalem or, you know, Arab villages in the north, I would try to speak Arabic. So I can order food. And is it Levantine? Is that
the Levantine dialect?
Yeah, Levantine dialect for Palestinian Arabic. So I know, but just basic things. I don't have the same vocabulary that I have in Darija. And I'm Muslim, so I pray in Arabic. So I would say, if you put me in a competition between the average person and me,
you know a lot more.
But they wouldn't be any useful words that, you know, it's just, yeah, I memorize the prayers, I recite them. But again, I might know a few more things than just someone who's never studied classical Arabic, just
pick
from
a
the
random
Quran, but...
American off the street, you know, definitely.
Yeah, exactly.
Same for me with my Hebrew. I don't really say I speak Hebrew because I don't, but, you know, I grew up, my mom's Jewish, so I, you know, and I heard a lot of prayers and I have like this background, weird, you know, cultural knowledge. And then my mom would say things to me like, Laila tov, boker tov, you know, good night, good morning, like, shek it, be quiet, just like animals.
Definitely. But the advantage I think that gives both of us is we can make the sounds. So again, if I enrolled in a classical Arabic class, I might have a little bit of an edge on just the average student who's not Muslim. And of course, if you move to Israel tomorrow, you know those sounds, you're familiar with them. You probably could read, you know.
Yeah, we had to learn the letters.
Hebrew school.
Right, we did the letters and things like that. And, you know, like, we actually dropped out of Hebrew school at, like, 7 or 8. My sister didn't want to go. So we, we're more just, like, culturally, like, we do, like, the festivities, but...
fair enough. Yeah.
But yeah, and then I did, I actually went to Israel in 2009 and I did volunteer work in a Palestinian village called Ayla up in the north for 1 month. And so like I knew a couple things like Manishma. like how are you? Like just small greetings. But yeah, I think you're
And you were using Hebrew or Arabic in the village?
No, in the village I was using we were using English and Arabic because it was a Palestinian village, but like you know, like my mom speaks fluent Hebrew, which I didn't even know until I was in high school. I always knew she knew some, right? Like I'm telling you, I know some, but like she had a phone call one day when I was in high school and she was just blah, 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 blah for like an hour. And I was like, wait, you really speak Hebrew? Like I didn't know. Like I didn't really know about her, you know, as a teenager, you don't care about your parents. Like so much. I think I told you my parents met on a kibbutz in Israel.
So romantic.
70s, yeah, when they were really like actually, you know, kibbutzim because now they're privatized and like there's money involved. Whereas like back in the day, it was like you lived in a community, you didn't make money, you just worked and they paid you with like food and shelter and chocolate and cigarettes. And like it was like, yeah,
tractor rides to the city.
Hippie, yeah, like the 70s, you know. But yeah, I was like, I was shocked when I actually heard her like conversing. I was like, oh, like, dang, like you have skills. Like I thought it was just, you know, like some basics, but I was like, oh no, she can hold her own. Yeah. You know,
my mom lived at her middle school and high school years in Thailand. Her dad was a scientist. Yeah. So I don't think she's fluent, but when she speaks Thai, she doesn't have an accent because she learned it as a kid. And as a kid, sometimes she and my aunt would say things in Thai to each other, like joking around, or if they didn't want us to hear something. And every now and then we'd go to a Thai restaurant in Chicago or something, and she would speak to them. And again, when you speak a language that's not very commonly,
on
the shock. And then they really started talking, and she goes, he went to school where on the street where we live. It was a really young guy. Of course, my mom was a lot older, but I guess they were... It had a city in Bangkok, like a part of the city in common.
Wild.
And it's just to me, I'm sure you've heard what Thai sounds like. To see Thai come out of my very tall, very ethnically Italian looking mom, it's like, wait, what? Do you really?
Yeah, it has
it's
a
like
very...
I knew she did. Yeah, but it's amazing. It's really amazing. She says it's an easy language to learn. I've never even attempted it. She taught us when we were little, like names of animals.
Mm-hmm.
I guess just for fun one day.
It's beautiful, but doesn't it,
it
does it
beautiful.
Have tones? I feel like it does have kind of...
She told me it's similar to Hebrew with the letters. I think the letters are all consonants and then you add the vowels on the top and below. And I think the letters have names of things, like rather than just ABC, it's actually like the name of an animal or something.
Ew. I got to look.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So she said as a kid, it was kind of fun to learn when they were learning it in school. She found
and maybe
it,
that's the
know,
way they taught it. Maybe that's like a method of teaching to make it fun.
That's D, that would be very logical.
Or something,
yeah,
like
this
a draw
is dog.
Dog.
This is cat. Yeah.
That's cute. I wonder. Yeah. I've never, I only enjoy Thai food and I'll see Thai when I go to the Thai restaurant.
Mm-hmm. And it's not a language, you know, I guess in the places I lived, I never heard it unless we were in a Thai restaurant. I you know, you don't just walk by and hear someone speaking Thai on the street. It wasn't something I experienced. So, yeah.
I love those jaw-dropping moments, right? Like when you speak Darija or your master.
Yeah.
Like my dad said that happened to him when I spoke French at the embassy. So before I moved to France, like I had to get a visa.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, like I'd been learning French in high school, but like he never heard me. And then I think I had been learning at university. Yeah, this was after university. So like I was majoring, you know, I was like you, normal student. And I majored in my French and loved it. And he was like, he heard me talk to the visa person just for like whatever half hour, and he was just like, "You speak, like I've never heard you speak French." I'm like, "Oh, really? How have you never heard it?" But of course, it was like an isolated part of my life that I did in school, and I never did it at home. So it is weird to like when those two worlds collide and somebody hears you doing something.
Definitely, definitely, and it's also sort of a different perception of you. He think, you know, he knows how you speak. He knows the sound of your voice, and then it's this different voice, these different words, a different accent. Yeah,
probably like people say different personality. Yeah, different voice. You feel like a different person, maybe a little persona.
Mm-hmm. I feel like that's the one part of languages I've never been able to adapt myself to. My Spanish speaking friends always tell me I'm too direct in Spanish. And in Israel, people are like, "You're so nice," or "I'm metuka, you're so sweet."
Because Israel,
I think
so direct.
They're very direct.
They're like the most direct.
Could you? Would you mind? You know, these aren't things that they
None
would normally say. They're very, very direct. Very, very like much like New Yorkers. You know, they just kind of say it. They're fast. And I've had more people call me metuka in Israel. I mean, I don't think anyone in America would say, "Oh, she's so sweet." You know, I'm just, you know, as I am. But I think it's like the culture of how I speak, no matter what language I'm speaking, it just doesn't change. So I don't have that gift to be able to do that.
That's so funny. And my colleague at my new job, she asked me, she's from Costa Rica. And then we have a couple of colleagues from Puerto Rico. So we're always speaking Spanish, you know, having lunch, just chatting. And she was like, "Do you spend a lot of time with Latinos?" And I was like, "No." And she was like, "You have these like mannerisms." And I was like,
It's
like the Arab is like, I don't know. Like, I was like, I don't know what mannerism. She's like, "Yeah, you're kind of like a Latina." I'm like, "Oh, I don't know."
Oh, you have the gift.
I don't know. I don't know what I'm doing. But she was like, I've only spent 1 month in Costa Rica. And then I traveled to Spain a few times. But those were like trips with kids and like a weekend with my friend. Yeah, like, you know, like very small, short trips. That's it. I'm like, I really haven't spent much time with Latinos. I don't know where this came
from. So interesting. That's so interesting.
Like, I don't know what she's talking about. But yeah, it was funny. I was like, oh, interesting. You just never know. You don't know how people perceive you, right? Like you were saying, we're doing the same things. Like, this is the same way. You know, I think maybe I'm talking with my hands a lot or something that like Americans usually keep their hands.
And one of my, let's say, my strategies is when I'm living in another country and trying to learn the language, sometimes I'll listen to how my native speaking friends ask for things, do things, and I try to mimic that.
100%, me too.
But in Israel, it was really hard for me to say, like, "Give me," or just because to me that sounds so strong.
Mm-hmm.
So I would always say, "Can I have?" or "Is it
please,
okay?"
You know,
like, "Is it possible?" I never would just say it and wait for them to bring me something. So yeah, I definitely think I do remember those moments. And also, you know, the sense of humor there is very different. And
Oh, it's so interesting how cultures can have
yes,
such a
yes.
different view, you know, like the same thing, but they're gonna just approach it so differently. You just reminded me though of when so as listeners, you know, if anybody's listened before, they know like I have these two kids, they're now 4 and 6, that I was raising in Polish primarily, for like the first 4 years of my son's life. And I had a group of friends that were all Polish, right? Like my ex-husband is Polish. All of our friends are like off the boat. Like they all moved here in like high school or later. So very Polish. And I would watch the females because we had like a group of like four of us, like couples. And I would just literally copy. I'd be like, how did they say that to their child? Like, what was the exact verb that they used or like the way they said? And I was like, yeah, I was like a hawk, like constantly watching the three of them. Like, okay, how are they saying it? You know, like picking up more ways because, you know, there's certain things that as a parent, you know, Christina, like you say the same things a lot, you know, like come here or blah, 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 you know, whatever it
Come
is.
here and here's your water bottle.
You
Here,
need to do this, blah, blah, blah.
yeah.
Listen to me or, you know, just like
Yeah.
certain things. Even in school today, we were talking because I had kids, they were a little bit crazy last period. And I was like, te calmas o te calmo. I was like, this is what like a Mexican mom would say to you because I had this kid just like wiling out. And I was like, you gonna calm down or do I need to calm you down? You know, like, and then my colleague was like, oh yeah, we say that all the time in Puerto Rico too. And I was like, oh yeah, okay. I thought it was Mexican, like, because I've heard it as like a Mexican mom saying, but like, I was just kidding with him, you know.
Yes, of course, of course.
It's just like funny, like, just these like things that, you know, certain people, the way we say things, the way, you know, it's funny because like it sounds weird in English, you know, like, you're gonna come down or am I gonna come you down? Like, we wouldn't say that, but in Spanish,
I
it
can
rolls
hear a
off.
parent saying that. Yeah, it rolls off the tongue in Spanish, you're right. But I could hear that happening in English. You calm
Yeah,
down
but
or
in
I'll
neighborhoods,
calm you
it rolls.
down. Yeah.
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 Because how old is your, you have a daughter?
She's five.
Oh, okay. So she's right in
Yeah.
between my two. Mine are six and
Yes.
we're in the same boat.
Aw. Yep. I repeat the same phrases almost every day for sure.
Is it in English or do you use other languages? Like,
English, yeah.
do you
You
mix them a
know,
little bit?
my mom's sister was really pushing the Italian, and a lot of people, just friends, were saying, no, speak in Hebrew, you know, then because that's like a let, you know, no one's gonna have that. But
Yeah.
I felt like we don't have that community in South Georgia, so it would almost just be like a secret language
It would be this
between the
forced
two of
thing.
us.
People would think you're spies or something.
Well, yeah, but it's like, you know, you had that Polish community, you had
Yes.
Polish friends, other Polish, I imagine other Polish children.
Grandparents, stores. We have a school here that they go to a Saturday school. Like there is a whole
So
community.
there it exists, the language exists. And even as a Hebrew speaker in South Georgia, sometimes I feel like my one of the ways I keep up my Hebrew is sitcoms, Israeli sitcoms, that Israeli television is really amazing in my opinion. And sometimes I find myself watching just to make sure I still speak Hebrew. I know it's so silly, but it's like, gosh, I haven't heard or used this language. I have a couple friends in Israel. I have a couple friends here that, you know, we talk on the phone maybe once a month in Hebrew. But for the most part, it's just I like speaking enough Hebrew that I can fold the laundry and not have to mess with subtitles. I can just put my show on and that's what I'm listening to. Yeah, but it really does sometimes feel like a secret language because
That is
I
funny.
never hear it unless I seek it out. I
And
hear
that's
Spanish every day. I can't go to the grocery store or gas station, you know, Spanish is everywhere.
right. Even if you didn't teach it, you'd hear
Even
it
if I didn't teach it,
around.
I'd hear it. It's in music, you know, now Bad Bunny, Becky G, they're on the radio. You don't even have to have
You
your
don't need
phone
to be on
on,
the
you know.
Spanish station. Yeah, you're just on the regular station. Sometimes they'll play some
Regular
song.
stations. Yeah, exactly.
But I think that is a polyglot problem where we have to, once you have more than one foreign language, like it's a matter of balancing. How do I maintain? Okay, I speak French, Italian, Spanish. Like, okay, I need to either use them, right? There has to be something in my life where I'm using them, or I need to like kind of maintain it, like force myself to use it. Like you said, like, okay, I enjoy sitcoms. Let me watch some Israeli sitcoms because otherwise you will lose it. It's attrition. Like if you're not going to use it, it's not your first language. So you lost. If you don't speak it for 20 years, it might still be there little by little, but you're going to lose the ability to speak, to be, you know, fluent and conversive and have that that ability.
And I found that my speaking abilities have diminished quite a bit. My listening is still there. A lot of the Israeli sitcoms I watch are just on YouTube, so I don't even have the option of Hebrew subtitles. It's just, you know, the show. So that's really there. But sometimes speaking it, I do have to stop, like pause and think, or I'll find myself choosing the more basic vocabulary words rather than, you know, there's maybe an easier way to say it with a higher level verb, something like that. But I'll find myself saying things in a more basic way. I'm still getting my point across. I'm still expressing myself, but again.
And we have to like balance, you know, life. And like, is this really important for me to keep a C1 level in this language, or can I have a B1, B2, you know? And as language teachers, right, we know all about this. Like you're, you know, without knowing it, you're critiquing your own speaking. You're like, if I was my student, I would notice a drop in my level and blah, blah, blah. You know, or you're even categorizing that this is a high vocab versus a lower vocab, a simpler sentence versus a more complex, you know, like these are, because we work in this every day, we're language teachers. That's just like, we live with rubrics and categorizing. And
the thing with Hebrew though, is I never anticipated that I would live in Israel. I would have been open to it, but when I got there, it was a lot of sweat and tears, definitely learning that language. I started out in the ulpan, like the government immersion program.
I was gonna ask if you did an ulpan. My mom did that.
Yeah, this out she did too. And it's for the new immigrants to Israel. Anyone, of course, can sign up. You know, the people. I wasn't a new immigrant, obviously, so I had to pay. It was like $90 a month, which is that's a steal. 5 hours a day, 5 days a week for
and
a month.
But it's all in Hebrew, right? Like everybody's
all in Hebrew
internationally, so they just
Russian, Japanese, German. I mean, if she taught in English, our teacher, it would have been unfair. Yeah, it would have been me and maybe three other people who would have been able to understand. And the book, of course, is all in Hebrew. But the advantage most of them had is that they were Jewish, so they could already read it. They didn't speak, like we were still speaking on the same level. But I mean, it really. I was in a relationship, so he used to help me. Oddly enough, I would help his younger brother with English, and he would help me learn to read Hebrew. But the learning to read, reading is so important. I had no idea how much we need to read on a daily basis. But yeah, learning to read and, you know,
there's a lot of vowels in Hebrew. Maybe people don't know. And you know, we both know Hebrew and Arabic. Arabic only has the three basic. There's the ah, there's the e, there's the oo. There's three, like that's it. But like Hebrew, there's like all these dots, and like
some of them sound the same to me. Yeah,
on the top or on the bottom. I mean, if you're not familiar with Hebrew vowels, like Google it while you're listening, because it's complicated. I can never keep it straight, and there's just more vowel sounds. I don't know.
And the interesting thing about the textbook and the first Ulpan, the government one, is the vowels weren't added.
Of course.
So it was all sight words. So I would add them in with pencil.
Yeah.
The teacher taught us the vowels. But again, when we were looking at the textbook, we had to have sight words. I worked so hard to learn it. I thought I might spend the rest of my life there. So when I came back, I was like, I'm not listening. Like, this is the language that I'm going to keep. And it's the hardest one to keep because. Yeah. It's not around me. Every now and then.
It's so different from English.
It's so different.
It's so different from the other languages you speak. I feel the same with Arabic. I'm like, I love this language, but man, it is like, I learned, you know, Italian by myself in like a year. And like, I've been sweating and like toiling with Arabic for years, and I still can barely say anything because I learn one dialect and then I need another and then I need another.
That's true. With Arabic, you really need to just pick a country and stay there. I've always heard Egypt is the best one because of their film industry. If you speak Egyptian, everyone can understand you.
I know that, but I don't like the way that they, you know, the letter Jim, that's like a G. G, they pronounce it G. So like Jamil, they say Gamil, and I'm like, no, I don't. I think I want to.
Wow, just that, and you've shut it up.
It's not the only thing, but
okay.
You know, everybody understands it. That's what they all say. But I think the Levantine or the like the Lubnan, like Lebanon and like Israel, like Palestine, like I like that accent more. I think it sounds and people say it sounds really nice on a female. So that's the consensus.
Okay. I do feel like, again, I'm from the Midwest. I feel like that's the Arabic I heard most. My mosque in Louisville, Kentucky was predominantly Jordanian, Palestinian, Lebanese, some Syrian. So that was like the region. And There were some Egyptians, but I definitely feel like Levantine was the
It sounds
dominant
more soft.
one.
Like the Egyptian is very like gug, like it's harsh. It's a little harsher. And then, of course, Moroccan, nobody understands. So I spent all this time studying it, but nobody else understands it. So I have to go more standard,
That's
standard.
not true. I mean, Tunisia, Algeria, Mauritania,
Right.
you've got
Right. I mean,
that
yes, the
part of
Maghreb,
Africa.
what we say in French, like the North Africans understand it, but to be understood in the broader scheme of like all of these 20 or so Arab countries. Yeah, but right now, I mean, when I try and speak, I have to know like where is the person from? They'll be like, "Oh, I'm from Egypt." I'll be like, "Okay, let me say like Gamila Gidden rather than Jamila Jidden." Like, try and make it sound
The G
kind of
is the
understood.
only way I can tell the Egyptian accent. My Arabic's not that good. Again, just the Levantine to me is what sounds like quote unquote Arabic. And then I'm of course able to identify Darija much faster. But to me, when I hear Egyptian, it doesn't come off right away until I hear the G sound. I'm like, okay, they're Egyptian.
Yeah, I think I like the Levantine. That's like my preferred. But again, it's weird for me to pick an accent. I never did that with Spanish. I don't know if you did. Like, I didn't try and sound Castilian or whatever. Like, I just spoke Spanish and like hoped my accent would get better and better. And like, I was in Costa Rica for a short time, like a month. But I just kind of like kept it like very like standard, I guess. Like people say, okay, speak very correctly, like, well, I'm a teacher, so yes, I'm gonna, conjugate correctly and use the subjunctive correctly. And but like I didn't have to pick. I didn't have to say I want to sound Argentinian or Colombian or Castilian. But like with Arabic, I do. I have to be like, okay, I think I need to pick this dialect and focus because otherwise just all over the place.
Have you studied abroad for Arabic? Did you, or just in the US?
Oh, well, yes. I mean, technically, so they offered it for the first time my senior year at university in the US. So I took it for that 1 year. But I was like so excited to take it, and I learned all the letters and how they connect and all the things in the summer. And then the teacher spent like 2 weeks teaching us, and I was like, oh my God, I was like tearing my eyeballs out. I was like, I'm so bored. I already know this. But he was great. He was from Sudan, and then I went to France. And I
There are a
did.
lot of people to speak Arabic with in France.
There's a ton, and I did 2 years. I was in a very small village my first year, and there happened to be this random French man, this older man who I think had like been in Algeria or something. I don't know. And he was teaching us Arabic, like Fusha, like very like classical. He had this whole book, all these things. So I did a year with him and this little class, and then I signed up for licence 1, like the first year of like undergrad at University of Rennes. So I moved to the capital city of Brittany and did a year there. So yeah, it was a whole experience. So I did do a year at university
But in France.
in France, and it was like civilization, like learning about like the civilization. Like we did translation, we did French to Arabic to French. Like it was not like useful. Like I didn't feel like I could order a coffee. I felt like I was just learning how to translate. Oh, but we did have 1 semester with a Syrian girl who was like a doctoral student, and we did a semester with her, which was the best class because she was like just teaching us, like Anabehi, like she would like teach us dialects, which was amazing. And then they switched us to a Tunisian, so I was like, okay, everything's different.
Wow,
And
everything's
it was
different.
2011, so they were having their revolution, so like all we talked about was the revolution. I feel like he didn't even really teach us the dialect. He was just like, look what's happening, the revolution. So yes, it was an interesting year to say the least. I mean, it would have
I
been
feel
great.
like
I wish I
France
had stayed.
definitely has a really strong Arabic speaking
It
population.
does. It 100%. And even Italy has a ton as well.
Definitely.
So yeah, there's a lot of North Africans, and Spain I'm sure does too. I mean, I wish I had spent more, but like I came back, I did a master's, I did other things, but
Go to France to study Arabic. That's an interesting little detour.
I mean, who knows? You like the things that, yeah, it's weird when I look back on my resume. I'm like, what have I done in these years I've been living? Like, what is my life? How has it brought me to this point? And I think we share some of that where it's like, I learned Hebrew for a relationship, and I did the same with Polish, and it's just like, well,
I do
so.
think there's The languages I speak the best are the ones I learned from relationships, whether it was romantic or just friendships. It wasn't until I established relationships that I really felt myself becoming fluent and confident. It helped a lot with my confidence, just having this person, kind of this like bubble of authentic engagement, sort of reserved for me, where you're speaking and interacting. And it's something I feel like I try to duplicate so much in my classroom, like make them interact in a friendly way in the language they're trying to learn. And here, when you have a friend or you're in a relationship with someone that speaks that language, you have that. Like it's, I feel like it just takes what you're learning in the classroom and makes it real.
But you know what? So many people have that and they don't take advantage of it, right? Like it's like a one-sided, you know, like I could be in a relationship with someone from, let's say, I don't even know, Georgia, the country, right? The
The
national.
country, yes.
And just if like he spoke English, I could just be like, great, we'll speak English. You know, like I wouldn't necessarily have to learn Georgian, right?
That's
Like, so
true.
there's a lot of international, interracial couples that don't necessarily make that effort to be like, I'm gonna also learn your language, or you know,
Well,
they
because
don't
I was
choose that.
living there, I thought I can't, he can't follow me everywhere. You know, I have to go out on my own. You know, he worked, I was going to Ulpan, like I knew I had to handle myself. And I'm a vegetarian, so there's always having to explain that. You
Oh
know, I
yeah.
get lost all the time because I'm terrible with direction. I always have to ask for directions. So I knew I'd have to survive there. And the other thing, and I don't know if you encountered this with Polish, is when you're with them and all their friends, and they're not going to sit there and speak English for one person, especially in their country. So, I mean, it was just so boring. So I was like, I have to learn this so I can at least, you know, laugh at the jokes and understand the stories.
Oh no, 100%. I mean, I was with my ex in the US. But even so, like when they get together, it's a very tight-knit community, and within the family, like everybody's, you know, that they speak Polish. You know, like if they're not speaking directly to you, they're gonna be speaking Polish. So my nature is to be like, I want to know. You know, I
Yeah,
want to be
I
on the
want to
outside.
participate.
I want to know what's happening, and I don't want to have to, right, like you said, be dependent on you. I want to be able to hold my own, to know what's going on. So yeah, I mean, from day one I was like, how do you say this, how do you say this, how do you, you know, like it's just my natural like curiosity of being like, tell me everything, how does this work. But yeah, how long were you in Israel?
You know, just like 7 months total. It really wasn't that long, but he and I were in a relationship for 2 years. So he was in the US for some of it, and I was there for some of it. But again, I mean, just I actually got a grant to study Hebrew, so I didn't want to take the grant, you know, like and just, you know, go there to travel and backpack around. I really wanted to use it for what it was meant for. And part of the grant, the scholarship, had a condition that when I returned, I taught Hebrew at the local Jewish school because it was Jewish Federation grant and they wanted me to like give back to the community. So again, I knew when I came back, I was going to be held accountable. You know, I couldn't just walk in there where there are other native speaking Israeli Hebrew teachers and be this girl that doesn't speak Hebrew. So I really worked hard. And it was funny because one of the things, you know, I'm there, I'm 22, that they were teaching me. So I was like, I'm going to be teaching kids. So I need to learn kids' songs. So, you know, my friends there who were, you know, other people in their 20s were teaching me these, you know, kids' songs about animals and
Yeah, it's a great way to
things like
learn. It feels
it is a
silly.
great way to learn, but it's a little silly. Yeah, it was a little silly. But I came back and I know these, you know, children's songs, nursery rhymes, and things like that in Hebrew that I then passed on in the classroom.
It is useful. I mean, I taught online during was it during the pandemic? Yeah, it must have been, because I was also a stay-at-home mom during the pandemic. Like I was a stay-at-home mom, and then the pandemic happened, so I just continued to be a stay-at-home mom. But I was teaching online with our local library, and like we started like a bilingual baby group where it was like 0 to 4, and I would teach songs. So like I had to like I knew some French ones, but like not really, because I lived in France as a 20-year-old. I didn't know any babies. I didn't have like I don't have any French roots. Same with Spanish, right? Like I had to seek these songs out, and then I was singing them with my own kids. And like, you know, I have this little booklet now of like I put them all online as like a Word docs, and I translated them so that the parents kind of knew what they were saying, because I was teaching them like sana sana colita de rana, but like, you know, what are we saying right now? So that the parents, who obviously they don't speak maybe French or Spanish, or maybe they do. But yeah, I was doing that for a little bit, which I really, you know, I've taught all levels, like literally babies, my own babies who are one day old to like senior citizens, and babies are not my, they're just not my age.
Oh, see, I love working with children. I find they're just fearless with language
Yeah.
learning. Something happens like at fourth grade where they start getting a little more self-conscious about the fact that they're saying something that they don't really understand. But gosh, when I taught in a Spanish immersion program for elementary, and I swear third grade, that is like they just jump right, they'll sing, they'll play whatever, you know,
Yeah,
silly
but
game.
you
I can
have to
walk in
have,
speaking Spanish.
but like you have
Yeah.
like the prep required, because when I taught
It is a lot of
English,
prep.
yeah, when I taught English in France, you know, they did it based on how well you spoke, you know, the language. So like, they put me in elementary because if I needed to, I could talk to the kids in French, you know, like understand them. But I was like, you know, the high schoolers, they didn't want you speaking English to them, or sorry, French. They didn't want you speaking, they only wanted you to speak English. Anyway, so I was with basically 6-year-olds to 11, because that's like the elementary age, like CP to like CM2, maybe even 12. But like that experience, I mean, I did it for 2 years. I was in 8 different schools over the 2 years. It was like, it was, I saw a lot of different kids, but like I was just like, this is fun, but like this is not what I want to do forever. Like this is just because
It's
it's
definitely
exhausting.
it's exhausting. That's exactly the word. You can't just give them a project to do amongst themselves
Or like
and sort of
go chat
supervise.
about these questions, or like create a PowerPoint. Like no, like with my high schoolers, I can be like, we're gonna create a PowerPoint about famous Latinos, you know, like for Heritage Month. Go create it. Here's the like criteria. Go create. Like you can't do that with 6-year-olds. Like you need to be on them all the time. Here, we're doing this, you
It's
know,
almost like
every 5 minutes.
being an actress in a performance. You're up there, you're the act, you're the
Yes.
main character in the
You're
play.
the one man show with all the instruments. Bing, bang, boom.
With the puppets and the,
Yeah.
yeah, the visual aids and all
I
that
mean, it's
stuff.
just,
Yeah, that
and
part.
I like the more complex topics. Like I teach a French 4 class, and we, you know, we're talking about technology, so you can really delve into like you know, the topic and like have a debate. We had a debate about, you know, how old kids should be when they get a cell phone, and like apps and the dangers and the cyberbullying. You know, like you can really get into a topic when you have high schoolers that you, and in middle school you can't do that, because at least in the US, right, middle school is like Spanish 1, French 1. They're just learning how to conjugate. That's
How to
about as
count,
crazy as it
yeah.
gets, right? So like it's just the way it is. But yeah, I mean, kids are great. I love my own two kids, but like maybe it's my time of life that I'm saturated with the little
I
kids.
completely understand. I mean, honestly, if in the state I was in, it was a 35-hour work week. You know, you get what, 50 minutes of that for planning, maybe 20, 30 for lunch. I mean, I was on. I really, like you said, a one-man show. I just was up there just performing for these kids all day long.
Yeah.
Occasionally, we do like little activities where I'd have maybe like a 5 or 10 minute break while they were creating or coloring or cutting something. But yeah, it was
Coloring.
pretty much all me. Yeah.
Yeah, thank God for coloring. I mean, all teaching is kind of, I don't know if you feel this way, like a performance. Like we have to kind of, you get your teacher like voice on, or you do your teacher, like I don't know, even on the online teaching, I felt it where there's this teacher presence that kind of comes out, and it's different than your like laid back presence. It's different than your mom presence. It's different than your friend. Like it's its own little thing, which is, it's just funny.
It is, you're exactly right.
So Christina, since we're both language teachers and you've been in the profession longer than I have like 15 years in the teaching business.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I'm getting there.
That's still pretty good.
But what, and just, you know, as polyglots, as language lovers, language learners, like what tips do you have for someone, maybe someone who is either, you know, you can pick like a beginner, or maybe they feel like they're plateauing, that intermediate plateau.
Oh, plateau. Oh, that's rough. That's such a hard stage. I think for beginners, I'm not a great, like a big app person, but my students love Duolingo. It's free. I know there are a lot of language apps, and my students at the university seem to like them, especially when you're first beginning. It gives you that vocab base that makes you feel more confident.
Yeah.
I like I said, with Hebrew, I really like TV shows. I think the secret for me is, one, I like things that are free, like I said, and two, it has to be something you love that you enjoy, because if you don't like it, it's homework. You
Right,
know, it's like, oh, I have to
commitments.
listen to this, I have to watch this. Yeah. So I find a TV show I like, or for Hebrew, there's a Hebrew podcast I like called Hebrew Time. And there's a similar YouTube channel called Piece of Hebrew. And I think those two, if you're a Hebrew speaker and you feel like that you're in that middle plateau, I think they're perfect because they're fully in Hebrew. So you definitely need to be conversational, but it's just like one step up. So you're still challenging yourself, but it's not so frustrating. Like when I listen to the news in Hebrew or political commentary, it's just so over my head. I just get the basic idea. I'm not really learning anything. So I'm just trying to keep up.
Right.
So those two. So Piece of Hebrew is the YouTube channel and Hebrew Time is the podcast I really like.
Piece
and they're both
as in pedazo, like a
piece of the, and as in pedazo,
not
yeah,
like shalom.
Okay. Shalom. Yeah. Okay. But Piece of Hebrew, if for your French students, his wife is French, living in Israel, and she has Piece of French, and it's the same thing. It definitely would be for your French, but it's a YouTube channel. It's free. If you don't like it, you don't have to.
Yeah, we will post, I'll post these in the show notes so that, you know.
Yeah. I'm a big fan of those. For Italian, it's always kind of tricky. Lately, I'm into Italian music. So again, it's free. I listen to it on, you know, my apps, you know, on my phone or whatever. For higher level Spanish, I think there's just so much. I mean, you know, if you have a streaming, you know, Netflix, I think there are shows in Spanish. I mean, it's just, I wish I had had that access when I was a college student. Right. The internet had just started when I was, you know, in the early 2000s.
But I think maybe the issue people have now, especially with Spanish, and even Italian, and, you know, French, but like, it's the overwhelm. It's like, if you look up podcast in Spanish or YouTube channel in Spanish,
hundreds,
you can spend an hour just searching and not even finding, you know, you don't actually spend any time studying because you're just trying to find someone you like. Or, you know, like I've told my students at Freestyle and elsewhere, like I had a guy who found a channel he liked and he would listen to it kind of like it was a YouTuber, but he listened to it as if it were a podcast on his commute. And it was like,
okay,
just stick with it. You know, like if you found someone you like their
if
voice,
you like
their content, then just stick, you know, like favorite them, follow them, stick with them. You know, you don't need to see the breadth of all of the YouTubers who make Spanish videos. Like there's too many. It's kind of the opposite of when, you know, we talked about Derija, how there's like no resources.
Yes.
And you just pick what you can get. Like, oh my God, I found a Derija page. Okay, cool. You know, with Spanish, I can't give you guys all the links, right? Like there's too many.
It's so saturated. I mean, so yeah, you're right. Find the one you like, find the one you enjoy. I feel like, again, if Spanish is the language you're learning, you're sort of lucky because you have those options always on all the streaming devices to put subtitles in Spanish or change the audio to Spanish and put the subtitles in English. You have those options there. Whereas with the lesser taught languages, there aren't quite as many things and quite as many options. That being said, I feel like Israeli TV is really making it big, even on Netflix. Italian and French are the two I have challenges. I've never really found a French show that I really like.
Oh.
Or other than Piece of French, you know, like a YouTuber or anything like that. Yeah. So if you have any recommendations there, I'd love to hear them.
Well, I had to watch 10% because we were teaching it. Which is really great if you want to know all the different French actors, because they feature like an actual actor playing a role of an actor. So that's about
okay.
Yeah, it's a show about agents for TV stars and movie stars. So it's kind of like, you know, that author writing about books and like TV people writing about TV. But yeah, it's really cool because you see these famous actors come in and play, and each episode is like a different famous actor. Anyway, it's cute, but it has a storyline that follows because you follow the agents. Anyway, they make 10% of the actors' money, like their whatever they earn. That's why it's called 10%. But the English is Call My Agent. So they totally changed the title for the English because it's like about agents. I really liked that one. I didn't think I would. And then I was getting into it. I was like, oh, okay, now that I'm watching
it. And what level would you recommend? Is that for the plateau? Is that for advanced?
We used that with our recap, or what did we call it? The
L4 recap, yeah.
Yeah, so it's like our intermediate, you know.
Okay.
So I think, yeah, it's pretty accessible. But I mean, like we said, anything. For the French, there's so many options. You kind of have to just find a genre. Like I honestly found, I'm watching two Arabic shows. I don't really watch TV, but I have I'll do like 5 minutes here and there, or like 10 minutes mm-hmm. to sneak it in. And I found one that is about like just this crazy story of these two women and whatever. I like it. And it's from Lebanon. And then the other mm-hmm. one I found is Egyptian, and it's like a woman who's divorcing. And I was like, cool, let's watch this. But she's like a mom and she's going through a divorce. And I was like, wow, this is like apropos. Let me watch. And so, yeah, it's cool to kind of hear those, like I was saying, those two dialects and see.
There is a movie. It's an Israeli movie. It's called Get, with two T's, as in the Jewish divorce. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Have you seen it?
No, but I know about the Get.
You know about the Get. There is some Darija in it because they're supposed to be Moroccan Jewish people getting a divorce. So there are a couple of scenes where they start arguing in Darija. I think, I can't remember if the movie's in French or in Hebrew. Oh my goodness. That's but funny. Yeah, and I believe it's definitely on a streaming platform now. I don't know if it's Netflix or Prime, but yeah, that's, I think, a good, if you're a polyglot and you're into, you know, French and Darija and maybe Hebrew, cool. It's got a little bit of everything.
I'm still trying to keep up with my Darija and, you know, the just knowing more about the different Arabic dialects. I feel like it was overwhelming to me when I first was learning Arabic. So back in like 2010, it was just overwhelming. And I was like, this mm-hmm. is too much. I can't think about it. You know, they were teaching us classical Fusha, and mm-hmm. I was like, okay, I'm just going to focus on classical. And they would tell us like, mm-hmm. every country has a different word for whale. And I was like, I don't want to know this. This is not helpful. One, because I'm never going to talk about whales. And two, because that's a lot of words.
Yeah, that is a lot of words. But I didn't know that.
I mean, just an example that I remember them telling us. And I was like, why? Why is this happening? But it's true. I mean, the way you say why, the way you say how are you, like there's so many. I get all mm-hmm. these reels on my Instagram because every time I like one, they send me more. Mm-hmm. But it's, you know, there's so many ways to greet and say how are you, depending on which country. It's just like,
wow.
It's craziness. But language is like that. Even with English, mm-hmm. you know, Spanish, you know, like we were, my Spanish 1 students today, we saw, you know, ¿Cómo está usted? ¿Cómo está? ¿Qué pasa? ¿Qué tal? Like, there's variation. And that's, mm-hmm. you know, they're like a few weeks into Spanish. And we're like, you should know these different variants. You know, they're a little bit more informal versus very formal. And same with English. We can say, hey, what's up? What's good? How's it going? Mm-hmm. What's new?
Oh my God. You're right. No, that's a good point. In English, we have infinite ways to ask someone how's it going. For first level, for Spanish 1, I get it right. I think it's called Super Easy Spanish, and they also mm-hmm. have Super Easy Italian, Super Easy French.
We watched it today.
And the reason I like that is because the people hosting kind of do the teacher talk. They really mm-hmm. enunciate and say things slowly, but then they go talk to people on the street. So then you get to hear, okay, how's just the native real. Speaker? You get, how are they going to say it? And then they have the double subtitles. So what, you know, Spanish and then English underneath, or Italian. And the Super Easy Italian I really like because they touch on a lot of very funny cultural topics. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And sometimes they're hosting in Milan and sometimes they're hosting in Napoli. So you kind of get that north south.
Yeah, I've only seen the ones in Milan. I haven't in Milano. But yeah, I love that website, and I always suggest it for my Polish students because it has the double subtitles, and that they have an easy Polish channel.
Oh, I didn't know that.
They have easy like everything almost. Not mm-hmm. every, big languages. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's super useful with the double subtitles. Mm-hmm. And the topics. Like, I feel like they keep the video short. It's like, you know, clothing. Like, they mm-hmm. keep it, like, what's in the kitchen? Or like, what do you mm-hmm. do for work? You know, they kind of keep it really short. So like today we were just watching, you know, like, ¿cuántos años tienes y dónde vives? Mm-hmm. You know, like just really basic. But yeah, it's really, really specific. So I always, you know, send certain channels. So I will put links to
put them all down there. Yeah. Now these are all ones that are helpful. And I just love the things that are free because you try it, you like it, you keep using it. If not, that's it. You goodbye. Know, you don't have to go in and cancel. Goodbye. You just toss it.
And like, yeah, like we said, if it's free, it doesn't hurt you to download the app, to mm-hmm. watch the YouTuber. You know, you get a few minutes in, you don't like it. Okay, fine. Mm-hmm. But like the, mm-hmm. when you're trying to learn a language, you hope that you get hooked and that you watch the whole 10 minutes. And mm-hmm. even if you only walk away with like 3 words that you learned, great, you learned 3 words, you know, like that's the goal, is keep learning.
When I was a student in Mexico, a Mexican friend of mine gave me a tip. He said he would watch TV in English and pause and repeat what the person said. Now, this seems a little tedious, but he said he really learned how to say whole phrases and it helped him with his accent. And when I think about those channels with the double subtitles, I think that'd be perfect. You know, you hit, you read, you listen, you know, you hit pause, you hit play, you listen to how the native speaker says it. Of course, everyone knows the trick where you can slow down the speed to really hear how they're pronouncing it. Yeah.
Although it's sometimes wonky if you go too slow.
You go, yeah, you just got to take it down 0.25, right? Not too
exactly.
Slow.
I think that's called shadowing. It's like a technique for language learning where, you try and repeat exactly verbatim and in the tone that the person said it, you know, like so that you get the intonation and you get all those other, you know, just it's like fresh in your mind. And so my students, I catch them doing it sometimes, my Spanish 2 students. You know, I'll just be talking to them and I'm like, okay, she goes, hoy vamos a hacer. And then the student's like, hoy vamos a hacer. And I'm like, wait. Stop. But I know
stop
like
parroting
it's
good, me, yeah.
It's a good technique for her to parrot, but I'm like, okay, I can't have all 20 of you do it. Like, you know, but she's like, I'm just practicing. I'm just but like, yes, definitely in the comfort of your home where you know the teacher is not trying to instruct. Yes, parrot as much as you want.
And I think too, just singing in a language. I know we do that a lot at freestyle. I do it in my university class as well. So if you can find a song you like, even if you don't understand it and you just sing it, I think it helps get you around the pronunciation, learning the letters, repetition. And then when you do learn those words, you already know how to say them. I feel like it's more natural. You know, babies kind of babble.
Yep.
They sort of repeat words and then they slowly start making sentences. I think kind of when we do that with songs, that's what we're doing. We're kind of learning words that we don't know and then understanding them later.
And there's a context to it, right? There's a whole, like maybe a whole sentence, like, why did you do that to me? And then like, you're just like, you don't realize what you're saying, but you're like, oh, that's a useful phrase. No, but songs are my 100%, like my go-to. That's my favorite way to learn another language is song. And then, you know, have a teacher like break it down. So when I've worked with a tutor, I had her do that a few times with Derija songs. And I was like, oh, this is what they're saying. It's just so useful. And like, you can learn so much from a structure or the vocab, or you start to see the pieces, you're like, oh, you know, she would give me a sec to see if I could understand it. And I was like, I know this word and I know that word. I don't know what they're trying to say.
See, I find that aspect a little challenging because it's like poetry. I mean, even listening to songs in my native language, I'll sing and not know what the song is about. So yeah, that seems like definitely a challenge that could help push through the plateau, that intermediate plateau.
So yeah, for sure.
One of the great professors I had in graduate school, he used to call that fluent enough. Like it's like you speak the language, that's where you plateau. You speak it well enough to do whatever you want in the language, interact, you know, perform tasks if you're in a country, but then you've got to really push yourself. You've got to read, you've got to study, you've got to write to kind of get to that more fluency zone, the more advanced.
And I think we should ask ourselves, like, do I need to be more fluent, or is this enough? You know, like if I turn the camera back on myself, like my Polish was not fluent enough to raise my kids, but like I kept studying and I kept trying. And like I said, I kept listening to my friends and repeating what they said and, you know, asking my ex, like, is this how to say this? You know, like, and I would, you know, it's probably like a B1, or maybe it was a B1 when I started. I don't know. I mean, I did a podcast. If anyone's interested, I did record a podcast with my Polish teacher. She asked me to be on her podcast, Paulina Lipiec. And so we had a podcast interview. Like I had an interview with her in Polish. So like, I don't know what my level was, but it was enough. It was conversational. But definitely like grammar mistakes were present and all that. But like, it was enough, right? And like now at the stage I'm at, like I teach Polish. So like I'm trying to get better with all those, you know, explaining the grammar. Like sometimes with French and Spanish, I know what's the answer and I know why. With Polish, I'm like, I know it's the answer, but I don't really know why. Like it's more like I picked it up naturally. So I don't have the academic background to be like, oh, it's like this because of this. You know, I have to like do my research and be like, oh, okay, this is this case because of this. But you know, like I feel that way. Like it's fluent enough, you know, like it's enough to talk to my kids. It's enough. I teach my beginners, my beginner intermediate class. And that's pretty much all I need. But I was like you. I was like gung-ho. I was doing classes every week. When my kids were little, because I was like, I need to get better. You know, my grammar needs to be better. And I was really dedicated to getting it to a certain level. But it depends on your life. It depends on what you need. You don't all have to have a C2 in every single language you speak.
Exactly. And at this point, because, you know, most other than Spanish and English, the other languages I use purely socializing, television, maybe reading a book, even the errors, it's like, oh, if I make mistakes, you know, I hear native speakers of English make mistakes. It doesn't end the conversation. The I can make mistakes in Hebrew, Italian, French, and it doesn't really change the ultimate goal. You know, I can still achieve, you know, what I'm trying to express, you know, hit those marks. Yeah.
True. People make mistakes all the time and they don't even know they're making them. People will say like, I have went. And I'm like, you mean you have gone? I'm like, they're like, what? And I'm like, oh my
I've
God.
I went there before. Yeah. Oh yeah. I've heard all of those.
I've went
and
there.
Just, yeah. And, yeah. But I think in a conversation or trying to express yourself, I don't feel like that ends it.
No, it doesn't.
So I mean, try.
How
like,
many people
I think,
use it? They think it's right. But I'm like, it's actually grammatically incorrect. But like people say it's so common to hear things like that.
Yeah, that's true. So,
what could, you know, and those are natives. I'm like, you know what? Some of these immigrants speak better English than the natives speak.
Yeah, when you learn the grammar from, you know, day one, yeah.
And they like went to university for English and they come here and they're like, I'm so sorry for my English. I'm like, your English is perfect. Don't apologize.
And I think too, in America, we're really used to that. We have such a strong, you know, immigrant population where we've just learned to, you know, we know what different accents sound like. We know, you know, the way they might pronounce certain letters. And honestly, I feel like it never shuts down the conversation. So that was a big lesson I kind of learned as an adult, because I hear my mistakes when I speak other languages. And it used to really bother me. But then it's like, if okay, what's my other option? Stop talking and then I'm not doing anything.
Right. And some people choose that route. Some people, people in my life that didn't want to make a mistake, so they didn't speak the language. And I'm like, well, now we're at
you're not going to progress at all. Yeah.
Yeah. Now, like, well, if you're not going to speak it, you're better. So definitely better to make mistakes. I think we've gotten more. I have perfectionistic tendencies, and I also will, you know, hear exactly what I'm saying and I want to say it correctly. And I second guess myself. I'm like, wait, was that supposed to be subjunctive? You know, tenga. And like, I'll correct myself and be super hyper conscious of it. Whereas people are like, we understood you, move on. Don't talk about grammar. Nobody cares about grammar.
I agree with that. I agree with that. I feel like it doesn't end the conversation for sure.
No, I think, and people are much more forgiving. And I actually spoke to this point when I did an episode about being a teacher of my native tongue, which when I taught English and teaching my non-native languages, is that like, and I've had other people, you know, I hosted an open discussion at one of the polyglot conferences, and people came and shared stories about teaching and, you know, native versus non-native. So I've had this discussion with people and they say that, yes, like we tend to be more forgiving when we're a native speaker speaking with a non-native. Like I let things slide with my ESL students. I was like, you know, I didn't correct them. I was like super not on top of it. It's fine. But like with my French and Spanish, I'll be a little bit more like, no, don't make that mistake. You know, like I've been in your position and I don't want you to keep saying that wrong in French. Like you got to, you know, fix that now. And like more hyper-vigilant about their pronunciation or like the way they're speaking. And with English, I like, that's, you know, like just let them keep speaking. I want to encourage them. Like, yeah, good. I understood everything you said. And like half of it was butchered. I'm like, it's fine. It's fine.
I have a slide in my day one PowerPoint when I at the university, and it's kind of a spin off of a quote I heard a long time ago, but I always tell them, you know, failure is good because it means you did something. The other option is nothing. So if you speak and you make a mistake, okay, you tried, maybe you notice the mistake, maybe you correct it next time, but if you just sit there quietly, nothing changes.
Right.
It's the same thing as exercise. You know, you exercise, you have to do it every day. You can't just do it. It's okay, that's it, I quit. Then nothing happens. You're just back to square one every time. And that's sort of how I feel about languages. And especially at this point with some of the languages that I speak just from living abroad, it's like, I want to maintain them. So if I have the opportunity, I'm going to try to speak. And if the other person doesn't want to or shoots me down or if I make a mistake, that's just a small price. Rather than forgetting and losing all that hard work I did.
Yeah, no, that's such a good point. And I tell my students that too. I'm like, this is a language. Like we are here to speak. Like I know you guys don't want to speak because you know you're high schoolers, but like you got to do it. You know, like when you get into the real world, there's no subtitles and books and pages. Mm-hmm. Nobody's handing you a worksheet. Like, you are speaking to people.
Yeah.
Like, you're on your own. I'm going to drop you in Mexico or Spain. Like, what are you going to do?
In Morocco, I remember the first couple times I went for doctor's appointments, I would actually ask my friends there who were fluent in French, like, okay, how do I say this? How do I say that? And sometimes I would actually write it down on a little tiny piece of paper and I'd be sitting in the waiting room, like, studying. So when they called me back, I could say, like, I need you to check this and this, and my ear hurts. Yeah, exactly. But then I still had to be prepared to think on my feet because you don't know what the doctor is going to respond. You don't know then what you have to go say at the pharmacy. But yeah, it really,
that's the
it was
classic.
A humbling experience. Yeah, but it
and
was
you
also
learn,
like,
you learn the question so well, and then you're not ready for the answer. You're like, what time is it? Or where do we, how do I get to the bookstore? And then like, and you're like, wait, I wasn't ready for the actual answer. I just learned the question.
Like, wait, could you write down what you just said?
I was nervous, and you know, my French was really good, but I was nervous going to the doctor in France. Like, I remember it being like a little bit stressful and like anxiety provoking, just like, oh my God, like, am I going to be able to understand? Am I going to be able to communicate? You know, like, and I was pretty much fluent at that point, but still it's a nerve wracking experience to do it in another language when you've only lived, done everything in English. And then, oh crap, I have to do this without my English. And all the names of diseases are, you know, like, there's different names. I'm like, am I going to understand? So it is.
Yes, definitely.
But that's what makes us grow, right? That's, we keep getting better.
Definitely. Yeah, I agree with that.
All right, Christina, we could talk for hours. But at the end, I always like to ask if there's like a word or a phrase that you want to teach us. And I know you have many languages to choose from, so this might be hard.
I always like words for good night. I know that's silly. It's very basic. But of course, like, buenas noches, buona notte, bon nuit, and in Hebrew, of course, laila tov. And good. Those are just my favorites. I feel like it's one of the first things you learn, you know, because it's in the greeting. And it's just such like a peaceful.
But you need it every day. You can tell someone every single day, good night. I like
exactly.
It. Arabic is my favorite because it's tisbah al akhir or tisbah al akhir, like, may you wake
wishing
up
you a good,
to good. Yeah, like,
yeah, wake up, I'm wishing good. You a good morning. Yeah.
Yeah, like, wake up to something good. Like, khair is like, you know, good. Like, just like, you know, masa al khair, like, good evening. It's the same, that idea of good. Like, I mean, all of them have the word good. Tov, good, buen.
Yeah. And what about in Polish? What is good night?
You can say dobranoc, which has the dobra, which is good, and then noc, night. Dobre
is not that hard.
Yeah.
Dobre. Oh, and then dzień dobry is the good morning.
Dobre.
Okay.
But you can also tell, you can tell someone słodki snów, which is sweet dreams.
Oh, that's nice.
Snów. And then they also say kolorowych snów, like, have colorful dreams, which I think is just like such a nice little image. Like, I always like say it to my kids because I want them to have colorful, you know, happy, vibrant, nice dreams. And like, I would never say that in English. I would never say good night, colorful dreams. But like, you do in Polish, you say like, okay, dobranoc, słodki snów, kolorowych snów. You know, like, it's just like a normal thing to wish, which is why it's so interesting, right? When you have a different language to the way that they say things, right? Like, even if we're talking about, you know, Arabic, salam alaikum, like, peace be upon you, like, that sounds really formal to us in English when you translate it, but it's such a beautiful thing to say, like, peace. We're hoping for peace, right? Like, which is really nice. Just, you know, maybe they don't think about it, maybe it's just so normalized to say.
See, for me, those are always my favorite because, like you said, it's a daily interaction. It's something you use every day. It's one of the first things you learn, but you still, no matter how advanced you get, it's still there. And I love those.
All the time. And I love the Arabic call and response, you know, like, assalamu alaikum, wa alaikum salam. Like, you know what you should say back, you know, like, and I guess English and Spanish, they have that, like, say the same thing. If someone tells you buenas noches, tell them buenas noches.
Buenas noches, exactly.
Yeah.
But I loved, I think Laila Tov was actually one of the first things I learned, and I knew Shalom and Laila Tov, and, you know, in Hebrew. And then I don't know, just those things you kind of, if it's a language you grew up with, you grow up hearing it. And of course, when I teach it to my students, it's always in chapter one, it's usually in the first pages. So yeah, I love those. I love learning how to do the greetings in different languages.
Especially because, it's useful, but it's also interesting culturally. And I mean, Shalom means hello, goodbye, and peace. So it has, you know, these three different, I remember my mom teaching us that when we were little, and we're like, why? Because, you know, English, those are three different things.
Well, ciao in Italian, I mean, it really can be hello and goodbye,
right? True. And salut, in French, but like, you know, when you only have the one perspective, I speak English, I know these words, why is there, this word means multiple things, and, you know, you start to like, your brain starts to figure.
Yeah, ours is very set, hello, goodbye, we don't, there's not a lot of leeway there.
Well, it's fascinating. Well, Christina, could keep you for another hour, but I will let you go to bed.
Thank you so much. This was a lot of fun.
Oh, it's my pleasure. No, yeah, anytime you want to come back, we'll have a new topic and chat about
it. Thank you.
Good luck with your classes. We'll chat soon.
Okay, bye. Have a good night.
And take care. Have a good night.
Bye.